Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning.
Welcome
everyone.
To Blog Talk
Today,
Radio.
Monday.
This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Forgive me, I jumped the gun a little bit too much. Well, today is Monday, January 3rd. It's the new year, 2022. First time we had an opportunity, 2022. First time we've had an opportunity literally to talk in the new year. So hopefully it will be a promising new year. It will eclipse all the issues and troubles that we've been suffering, even though the numbers don't look that way. And more and more people are getting infected. More and more people are coming down to the new strain, Omicron, of the disease that everyone is suffering one way or the other. So it's really getting really quite troublesome, which is a shame. Anyway, well, we expected to get some guests on tonight, but rather they're not on. And so we'll cover on some other issues that are really indicative of what we wanted to talk about. One of the most compelling thing, unfortunately, is that despite all the numbers coming out, despite the governor speaking to the number of people are infected, the number of people that are in ICUs, the ones that are getting intubated, and so on and so forth, what we find is that the message is not getting through. For some reason, people are so fed up with the regimen of staying within the boundaries, wearing a mask, getting inoculated. It's possible that the CDC and they're equivocating, their lack of clarity in their language is causing more people to move away from listening to them, and the impact of the severity of the disease, should you get it, is too great. Or maybe people believe that Omicron is not as dangerous as the original Delta virus, because when it does infect people, and it infects people in a manner that is actually more contagious, it seems, than the Delta. But once the Delta got into you, there were major ramifications, and people really got sick. Some people never got over it. Some people did get over the original, the original strain, and yet they would come down with long haul disease 3 months, 4 months, 5 months later, and even that never made quite an impact because it wasn't really spoken about very clearly and very succinctly. I read more about long-haul disease from the United Kingdom and from Europe, and very little, as far as I was concerned, in the United States. Never understood that dynamic either. It wasn't a question of scaring people. It's to warn them of what could conceivably happen. I never thought ever that there was even one death by anyone getting inoculated, against COVID. I have heard, but I've never seen the proof, that some people who did get inoculated actually died from it. It may have been, I heard that men were more prone to having their heart muscles, become inflated somehow and inflamed. But I didn't know that people died from it, but I guess it is conceivable. And when it comes to the new virus that's going on right now, instead of realizing that it also may have ramifications later on down the road, we find that people believe, well, it's going to blow over real quickly. It won't really harm me. I'm not going to get really badly sick from it. And I may get a cold, or I may get a little sneezing, or may have a runny nose, or whatever those things are, but it's not going to be very deleterious to my health. I don't know if we can say that at the moment. We didn't know that about Delta, and we thought that once you got over it, even if you got infected and you didn't have an antidote of any kind, if you didn't get an inoculation, to build up your capacity to fight off the Delta virus. It didn't seem to matter. People got it. People got over it. But then they got the infection known as long hauler disease, which debilitates people. They lose their hair. They lose weight. They lose their ability to ingest food. They throw up water. They also find that they're evacuating from the rear as well. They just can't function. And it is absolutely unbelievable the pain that they go through. And that's not even covered. And the idea is not to scare people, but the idea is to warn people that all this can be avoided. But then there's another issue. On the other side, you've got the whole issue of people refusing to get inoculated because they feel that it's harmful. They feel that they have a right to not be inoculated, and they do in America. You don't have to be inoculated. So it's just, beseeching people to engage in the best conduct for themselves. But some people say, well, it's not for my benefit, and they don't want to do it. And so it is what it is. We're not an authoritarian government. We can't impose this sort of thing. This is not China, where they can lock down 13 or 15 million people in a community, and you're not allowed to leave your house unless every second day to buy some staple foods, and that's about it. And otherwise, you're locked in the home. And they make sure to keep everything secure. The police are on the streets. You're going to be jailed if, God forbid, you're on the street. You're not permitted to be so, and you have no proof of what you're doing and why you're doing it. So these are different situations. You don't find this sort of issue in Germany. You don't find it in Denmark. You don't find it in France or in Switzerland or in Italy or in Spain or in Portugal. But whatever the case is, and we don't find it here where the government is running roughshod on people's rights. Probably a lot of this has to do with the fact that people are not listening to best practice by the CDC for whatever reason. And the reason it's not happening is because evidently they're just not engaged in proper conduct, and because they're not telling people all the issues they need to be aware of. The numbers don't seem to impact many people. They figure it's not going to come and hurt them, which is absolutely frightening, because it does. Our ICUs, our care units in hospitals are almost at the brink of collapse because there's so many people getting infected. The numbers in Westchester County have increased by 100%, 50%. It is absolutely mind-boggling. The entire state has gone through the roof. Yonkers numbers have doubled since last week, and there are other communities as well. And our schools are closed, not because they needed to be closed, because they should never have been closed. But the bottom line is the schools were never disinfected, which is what they're supposed to do. And we spoke about this. I remember when I spoke to John Bailey about it from the White Plains Cincinnati Reporter, who has really been quite eloquent in writing up the numbers and putting together all these figures so people can recognize it. But it seems to gloss over their sensibilities, and they dismiss it. They read the articles, don't get me wrong, because the numbers are very high for the number of people reading the articles. But what we find is that it doesn't seem to affect their conduct, which is really very exasperating. And also the fact that a lot of the media, certainly in Westchester County, of which Yonkers is part of, and of course the White Plains Cincinnati Reporter, John Bailey's publication, the White Plains Cincinnati Reporter, they write about it, but the other media doesn't. I think it's too complex for them to figure it out. Or it really is a question of compassion. which people don't recognize. The amount of work to tabulate all these numbers by Mr. Bailey is absolutely stupendous. Unfortunately, people don't seem to recognize that. But the reporting is phenomenal. The fact that the facts are coming out, phenomenal. Kudos to him for doing it. And yet I know that many people are hoping, oh, well, the Journal News would do it. The Journal News is basically bankrupt. You know, they didn't publish about a week and a half ago for 2 days. They didn't publish a few days ago for 2 days. Will they be even open and publishing next week? Who knows? And who cares? Because they don't cover the news. If you live in Westchester County, do you give a hoot one way or the other what's going up in Newburgh? No, you don't. And do I care what's going on in Buffalo? No, I don't. I want to know what's going on here. I don't want to obfuscate the numbers that are coming out of Yonkers because we're thrown under the line of Westchester County. Sorry, that doesn't cut it. It doesn't really matter what goes on in Ardsley, even though it does. It doesn't really matter what goes on in Mamaroneck, even though it does. It doesn't matter what's going on in New Rochelle, even though it does. What matters is where I live, where I work. That's what matters to me. And I need to have those figures defined and delineated and broken up by communities, whether it's Bronxville, where there are under 7,000 people who live in the village, or whether it's the city of Yonkers, where we're the third largest city in the state. And New York City, our neighbor, is the number one city in the entire state. I think Buffalo is number two. And guess what? Yonkers, number three. So how do we balance all of this? We don't. And the point is, it's incredulous. And the fact that all the media is not covering this in the way that Mr. Bailey is doing it is absolutely astounding. And it is a smack in the face to the reality that we live in. How can you ignore the facts that exist? And to even think that, you know, the temerity of not covering the story is mind-boggling to me. Absolutely mind-boggling. The numbers will blow your brains out. And yet, no effect whatsoever. None whatsoever. And every time you turn around, the equivocation that one would hear in the language from the CDC, it doesn't make sense. Why do we have to sequester ourselves for 2 weeks? Then it went down to 10 days. Now it's down to 5 days. Really? What's the game here? Is this a guessing game or is this science? What are we doing? Is this scientific or is this political dogma? And you know what? The problem is it's more dogma, whether political or anything else, than it is science. And if our scientists, who are supposed to oversee all of this stuff, can't talk a fair game and tell us what to be concerned about and how to take care of ourselves and not pay people $100 or $500 to get inoculated, what a waste of time. You know, what we should be doing is saying, okay, you have an opportunity to get a free vaccination, you can get a free test to find out if you are infected, and if you decide for whatever reason that you don't want to get the inoculation, well, I guess that's up to you. But the bottom line is, when it's time for you to go to hospital, we're not going to take you and we're not going to pay for your medical help, for your medical care, no matter what program you're on. So if you got your personal health insurance or if you got the government taking care of your health, it ain't happening. And you know what? There's nothing draconian about that. I got inoculated. I have my three shots, and I'm very happy about it. But then again, I'm in one of those areas where I'm prone to becoming infected. I wear my mask, a very expensive mask at that, and it's supposed to, when I breathe in and out, not only does it clean the air when I breathe it in, but it also cleans the air, and it's an antiseptic mask that doesn't allow any of the germs that I might have in case I get infected to breathe out. And, you know, and people wearing masks under their nose, give me a break. I mean, they should be arrested on the streets for doing that because it's ridiculous. And you know what's very interesting? In China, and this is very, very important, they used to wear masks for years, way, way before anything happened with COVID. But the reason they were wearing it is because the Chinese are one of the biggest users of coal. And I remember being in Istanbul, Turkey, for example, where the smoke from the coal was so thick that you could barely breathe. And guess what? People were wearing masks, simple masks, because all they needed to make sure of was that you didn't ingest the smoke and whatever particles were floating that created the smoke. So that's why they were wearing it. The Chinese also wore it for that reason, but I was never in mainland China. I wasn't even in Hong Kong. My parents went there and to Japan and to the Orient, but I never had an opportunity to go there. I ended up going to places like Pakistan and India and Nepal along the Chinese border, but never crossed into China. But whatever the case is, these are the issues. So in places like Turkey, where there's so much coal being used, smoke. Same thing in China, in many parts of the country. And that's why they wear masks. And wherever you look, you find a lot of people who are of Chinese descent who also wear it, even here before we had the problem with COVID, in order to protect their breathing. And that was always smart. I always admired that, and it was something to recognize. Anyway, so that's the story, and that's the way that thing works. So I find it very, very compelling that people are not paying attention. I find it even worse that the responsibility of so much media undermines that media, such as John Bailey's operation, because they don't replicate the necessity for informing the public that reads their publication of the facts that are required for them to know. So they are kept ignorant by the fact that the media doesn't tell them what's going on. They're kept ignorant by the equivocation of the CDC, the health departments locally, and undermined by the fact that people saying, oh, well, let's see now, if you're black and you haven't gotten your inoculation, we'll give you $500 to get inoculated. Really? Really? Would you rather die, or would you rather go through the infection and maybe suffer for the rest of your life as a long hauler? This is what you want, so you're waiting for the money? Can we afford to even give people $500? I say we can't afford to do any of that. And I think that if you need to get inoculated, you should get your inoculation free. I know that there are many communities where buses come in and they either give you one type of a drug, assuming you started with that particular drug, even though they're saying that if you took one type of brand inoculation, you're permitted to take another one, and so on and so forth. Luckily for me, I started with Moderna, not that it was a choice. When I went to the pharmacy to get the inoculation, they gave me Moderna. The second one was also Moderna. And because of my age, because I'm over 65, when it came to having waited 6 months after my second dose, I got my third dose in December of this year, of last year rather. So only about a month ago. And so I got my third inoculation. You know, it was really very interesting. I had the card, which was filled out by the same pharmacy that gave me the original inoculations. I went there. And then I think it took about 2 weeks for it to show up in my New York State Plus Pass. So it's all online. So I put the information in there. They found my information for my first inoculation, for my second inoculation, and then I think it was 14 or 16 days later that my third inoculation showed up, which was terrific, and I was thrilled. But then, I don't know why, but I kept on carrying my physical card as well as my cell phone where it's stored. And then I just somehow wanted to check. I don't know why. Wanted to see if there was anything new that would come on and that would show up through that website. And it turned out I couldn't find my third inoculation. So I said, well, I guess I lucked out. You know, sometimes life leads you to do things that are not explicable. But I find that that's been happening to me in my whole life. I don't think I have the intellect or the capacity to think everything out as I should, but somehow the spirits or God or whatever, or somebody is watching over me and informing me that I should do this, that, or the other. And then, interestingly enough, I ended up having lunch with some people. It was yesterday, and hardly anybody was there, to be honest with you, which is very interesting. The next group of people were about three or four booths away, and everyone was wearing masks. But while you were eating, of course, you weren't. And they checked all the IDs, which was really terrific. And I don't think you can enter any place, even those places that you may have gone to for many, many years, whether it be a diner or a restaurant. They knew you, they know you, but they don't know how you stand as far as inoculations are concerned and so on. So everybody gets checked. I had gone to a diner that I always frequented. I had gone there for a breakfast, and this was last week. And interestingly enough, hardly anybody was there, but then I went there very early. I went there like for a 7 o'clock breakfast because I had some other things I needed to do. And I said, you know what? I don't want to do any cooking today. Let me just go. And literally, I think I was the one seated in a booth by myself. Nobody else sat anywhere near me. And then there were two guys at the counter. They were talking, evidently friends. And at the other end of the diner, I saw there was only another two people sitting, very, very far removed. There were more people working in the diner than even customers. So eventually I left, and I saw more people were coming in. But whatever the case is, so it's just very interesting that in both situations, and going for breakfast in the middle of the week, very early, met hardly anyone, and then when I went on Sunday, yesterday, for a lunch, it turned out very few people. Sorry, it was a breakfast, forgive me, breakfast yesterday, and there was hardly anybody there as well. So very, very interesting. I hope that people will take the time and will show a concern for themselves, because I think it's important that they take a concern for themselves. There should be a judgment call, not based on political dogma, whether you're on one side or the other, because people, no matter their political perspective, no matter whether they're very progressive or whether they're very conservative or they're somewhere in the middle of this panoply of concepts out there, the bottom line is people are getting infected no matter what their political position is. You could just get infected. And, you know, the Delta virus, which is now eclipsed by the severity, not the severity, but rather the propensity of the Omicron virus to infect people, is so great that what's happening there is that you find that people are succumbing to it, and it doesn't matter if you're a conservative or if you're a progressive, anybody can get infected. And I'm very worried that eventually the hospitals will be overwhelmed and there won't be any room and people will have to wait. I remember reading an article from the Buffalo newspaper in Buffalo, New York, and it turned out that they had a waiting time for the ICUs to be open, and people needed to wait 12, 13, 14, 15 hours until they got seen by the ICU doctor. Eventually, when they were released from the ICU, they needed to put them someplace to to resuscitate and bring themselves back to health. And they were looking for a nursing home facility. And the closest nursing home facility to Buffalo was, are you sitting down for this, in New York City? In New York City. All the way from Buffalo, they had to go all the way down to New York City. And they traversed all the different hospitals and nursing homes along the way. It's not like they picked up the phone and let me see if there's something available in Riverdale, New York, or in Manhattan, or in Queens, or in Staten Island. No, they didn't do that. They went through the process. And they ended up in New York City. Interesting, isn't it? You know, and people are not seemingly being, taking in these sort of issues and results and figures and people who are still dying from COVID and people who are getting long-term effects of COVID and people who are still not inoculated. And everyone's at fault here. The media that doesn't report, the media that obfuscates the facts or never even covers the facts or just is oblivious to it, or the fact that there's obfuscation in language and a lack of clarity in the language from the CDC, the lack of being made aware of this, the fact that people, governments are willing to pay for people to get inoculated. Really? So what? What does that do? The fact that people are not getting tested because the testing kits are not available. You know, when they talk a good game, and that's the way it works, but that's about it and nothing more. And it's very, very frightening. Well, I see that we've got our next caller on the line. I think it's Mr. Edelman. So let's see if we can pull him in. Bear with me a moment. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you?
Good. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. What a pleasure. I'm almost thankful to have survived 2021, and the promise
of
2022 is right here. So here we are. First of all, how are you
here
doing?
Here we are.
Are you taking care of yourself?
Almost.
Almost. Well,
almost.
I guess your wife is there to make sure that she can whip you into shape.
She can.
Yeah, I know she can. So thank God for the wife. Otherwise, I have no idea where we would be. Well,
exactly.
There are a lot of things that are happening, of course, on the national stage. What's the most important thing that you recognize needs to be spoken about before I give you some of the issues that I had contemplated?
Well, leaving the pandemic aside for a moment, I think politically the most important thing is the results of the report of the January 6th Commission on the involvement of the former President of the United States in an attempted coup d'etat.
Yeah. But it is,
everybody
it is
needs
interesting,
to know.
Though. Everybody does need to know, but do you feel, and I get the impression that people are starting to recognize the reality of it, because so far it's been people saying, oh, no, this didn't happen. They didn't own up to their involvement in telling the president what to do or if to do or how to get around it. So there was a lot of obfuscation, and we heard it from the Republican side of the aisle more so than we heard it from the Democratic side, but the Democratic side was had a position of being adversarial rather than revealing the proof. So the proof is starting to come out in greater numbers
slowly,
than before.
It's well, they've interviewed over 300 people, and they're They're not done interviewing, and they're not done sending out subpoenas and compelling people who don't want to cooperate to cooperate. I think it's very important historically, not only for history, but it's very important for the sanity of a majority of the people in the United States to understand just exactly what this prior guy tried to do and how he tried to subvert 240 years of democracy because he wanted to retain power in the face of losing an election. And he lost that election, by the way, by 7 million votes.
Right.
Even though it's not reflected in the electoral vote count, unfortunately, we're not really a democracy. We're a republic. And as a result, you can win by 7 million votes, but only win the Electoral College slightly. And that's what happened.
Right.
Well, once we understand
the issue.
Yeah.
Go ahead, no. Sorry.
No, no.
Go ahead.
Once we understand the depths of the treason and sedition that Donald Trump and his allies were engaged in, once we understand that, it will be abundantly clear that whether you are a Republican or a Democrat is of no moment. But whether you are a Republican small R is what concerns us. In other words, what's more important, your party affiliation or preserving the democracy for generations? That's the issue.
Well, that's a very compelling perspective, and I don't think a lot of people recognize that. It probably goes over many people's heads. The thing that I found interesting about this whole issue is that while this is going on and we're learning more and more about the January 6th attacks on the Capitol and where facts are starting to come out, not fully, but they're moving in the right direction because it's being uncovered. And so people are reading more and more about it. And it's the major media that's being able to do that, because in the local media, I just don't have the complexity and the connections to get there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What's interesting, though, is at the same time, we find that America is leaning toward the Republicans and moving away from the Democrats. What's happening there? Because it's juxtaposed to a reality that should be making itself felt.
Well,
no? What's going on?
First of all, let's dissect this, okay? When you say the Republicans, the people are moving toward the Republican Party, that's not true. What is true is that generic Republican ballot beats the generic Democratic ballot in these polls. And that is primarily a reaction to Joe Biden's presidency thus far, which has disappointed on the issue on the issue of the pandemic. It's disappointed people. And in addition, the withdrawal from Afghanistan was pretty much botched. So on those two issues, people are turned off, shall we say, by the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm.
That could change
that explains
momentarily.
It better than that explains it better than the way I suggested it. I didn't think of going into that part of it, but that's the foundation for it all. But can the Biden administration turn things around? They do have time.
My next point is they got plenty of time. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be contrarian about this. I actually think it's to the president's advantage that he is down in the polls, because in politics there's a thing called momentum. So I would rather have him be down in the polls now. And pick up momentum going toward the 2022 congressionals than I would have him be very popular now and all of a sudden so popular on the eve of the election. So all this Newt Gingrich BS about Republicans winning, I don't believe that's true. I believe by the time they get through with this January 6th report, Republicans will look like, you know what, dread.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very, very salient. I didn't really think of it that far ahead, but I think you're right about that. That makes a lot of sense to me. It's an impressive way of looking at it. Is there a problem with regard to Kamala Harris? She seems not to be helping as a vice presidential candidate. not as a candidate, but as the vice president. She doesn't seem to be helping the administration. Does she have the capacity to guide, or, you know, by just simply saying, I think this is something we should look into, or does she not have it?
First of all, she was given a portfolio that's virtually impossible to manage because it's the president's responsibility, for example, the border. He gave her responsibility for – she can't fix the border. No vice president can fix
the
border. No. So when he says you're responsible for the border, that's a pretty big order, and she can't do anything with it. But her problem is not so much issues. Her problem is perception. Every time she's asked a serious question, from my point of view, she answers by laughing. Now, that may be her go-to crutch. You know, people that have a stutter or a speech impediment, they have a word. You know, I knew somebody who was a great trial lawyer, but he had a stutter problem, and his word was actually, which got him, bridged him from one thought to another. So her crutch may be a laugh, but that comes across as extremely unserious. And there is no guarantee that she will be the heir apparent if Joe Biden chooses not to run for a second term, which I'd be more than happy to put money on. I don't think he's going to run, but I don't think Donald Trump's going to run either.
Well, Donald Trump always talks a good game, and then we'll find out if he does or doesn't. And then,
well, he's talking a good game
January
now because he's raising
insurrection.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, it will ruin him.
Exactly.
And who knows how much more information they'll find out about his operations and so on and so forth.
Oh, come on. Plenty. He was in control of this the entire time. The Mark Meadows and the Jim Jordans, and these people were acting at his request and on his behalf. There's no way that a staffer or a member of the White House staff, those around Donald Trump, would dare anything like this if they didn't have his complete assent.
Correct. But, you know, which speaks to another issue. On the national stage, on the local stage, or the state or a local stage, there's a hierarchy, whether it's there or implied to be there. Does everyone become a sycophant to the process of the way things are? Is that the problem? We're always doing whatever the boss says with no discourse whatsoever.
So there are two kinds of counselors that are valuable to any elected official. Ones that are loyal and carry out the orders of the executive, and the other person who sits is the last person he should be seeing every night, who is telling him how it is and is not telling it. So every official, whether it's the president of an advertising agency, a business, or official who's responsible as an executive, needs somebody there saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, this is a bad idea, that's a bad idea. Donald Trump didn't have that. Donald Trump only had people
that were kissing
his butt.
He never had that with his father, and he never had it under his own guidance when he was running.
It was a one-man show. For his entire life, he had no idea what team was. He had no idea what a management style was. And that's the way he operated his presidency, which is why, one of the reasons why it came to nothing. And why he was fired by the people of the nation.
Wow. So it is based on demeanor rather than governmental structure. Is that the case? Because we could be in Russia. It wouldn't make a difference. Whatever Putin says, that's the way it works.
Exactly. That's what Trump would prefer. He said it on more than one occasion. He would like to be president for life like Xi, and president for decades like. That's what he admired. He admired the strong men of the world, and he crapped on people who were our allies that he perceived were weak, like Merkel
Correct.
And Macron.
Yeah.
And so when you bow at the altar of authoritarianism, you know, you do something that has been unacceptable in America for 230-something years. And going forward, when people learn how absolutely authoritarian-like he is, they're going to reject him. Again, which is why, by the way, I don't think he's going to run. I don't think he wants to lose twice.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think he could suffer that emotionally.
No. I don't think so either.
But then won't the insurrection or getting more information about the insurrection, his personal financial standings with Deutsche Bank and so many other issues that revolve
around
his world,
That
probably will ruin him, won't it? It doesn't seem logical that he could survive it. And what about the family?
Well, I don't know what the answer is because I don't know what the charges are. But I suggest to you,
exactly,
he is under investigation in three jurisdictions, right?
Mm-hmm.
The state of New York,
right?
New York, Washington D.C., and one more, the Northern District of Virginia. So he's under investigation, or his campaign is under investigation for multiple felonies. All he has to do is be indicted on one of them. And he'll have his hands full defending himself, which will distract him from being able to run. I believe what he's doing, frankly, is raising money to pay his lawyers.
Mm-hmm. I see. Never thought about that. That makes a lot of sense. Getting back to the border, even though that was something that has saddled the vice president, is there no way for us to control the border with Mexico? Not that people from Mexico are coming across the border. Mexico is our southern neighbor, and people from all over the world come through South America all the way up to Mexico and then cross the border from there into the United States.
Well,
I thought we had enough people, even without a physical border. Don't we have enough people employed there to watch over the border to make sure people don't come over?
Well, they're going to come over. The question is, what do you do with them? Catch them on this side of the border. And the answer is, part of the answer is you send them back to Mexico. Now, that you're allowed, the people that are seeking asylum, by the way, have an absolute legal right to claim asylum and have their claims adjudicated by a court. But until they are adjudicated and until such time that these people are granted asylum, they shouldn't be in the United States. They should remain in Mexico, or better off, they should get online in the country from which they are fleeing. The problem with that, of course, is the reason they're fleeing is death and destruction by the cartels and gangs in those countries.
Yeah, but can America manage all the... Yeah, well, that's the point. Can America manage all these issues from Nicaragua, from Honduras, from wherever, from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, or everybody's coming in across from Asia all the way through Africa into South America and up the border?
Mm-hmm.
And we have people who are infected and they don't even know it and are coming into the country, and we don't sequester them for 14 days. So what's going on with that policy? It's not working, is it? Doesn't seem to be working for me.
Well, it didn't work under Trump. It didn't work under Bush. It didn't work under Obama. And it's not working. It's not working now. And it's one of the reasons that Kamala Harris should not have been given that assignment, because it's way above her pay grade. That is a situation that has to be dealt with globally in terms of what we do. In terms of providing aid to the triangle countries, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Guatemala, and to make sure that these people don't have to flee their countries, it's a huge problem. But it's not.
But what I don't understand
with a border fence.
Well, what I don't understand is, okay, so Kamala Harris was saddled with this responsibility, but isn't her position only just to oversee it, where people may come to her and say, well, we think this might work or that might work, and this is how we can validate it. And she says either yes or no, or let me think about it and I'll get back to you.
Because the problem is difficult. How come we haven't solved the problem through the last five administrations? Because the problem is a massive problem, and no one person can solve it, which is why Joe Biden shouldn't have given Kamala Harris that particular assignment. What he should have done
Why is it so complex? I don't understand why it's so complex. We either have enough people on the border watching the border.
It's complex because the root of the problem is, why are these people leaving their home countries?
We know why they're doing it, because of economic duress
If you don't solve that, you're going to have tens of thousands of people.
Does America? Is that a responsibility of America to resolve the problems in all these different countries all around the world?
It's not all around the world. If we don't want thousands of people rushing the border, we need to take steps to mitigate why they're doing it. Effectively.
Well,
was put up
mean,
a wall.
You know,
was
we
put
had
up
that
a fence,
recent,
and he didn't.
Well, we had that recent problem like that where from Kurdistan, there were a lot of people being flown into Belarus, and then they wanted to come across the border via Poland in order to get to traverse Poland in order to get to Germany. Poland wouldn't let them across the border, and then they eventually worked out an agreement to ship them all back to Kurdistan, to Iraq. Why can't we do something like that? How do they do it? They don't even have the financial means that we do.
First of all, the situations are not analogous. We do of keeping them Mexico. Seeking asylum.
But it's not working.
If they're seeking asylum, there's international law that says they have a right to have their cases heard.
Right.
They want to seek asylum. All right, so the case is adjudicated. Right now, our policy is to keep them in Mexico, not keep them in the United States.
But I thought they were coming into the United States,
weren't they?
Some
of them are probably but we have enough border security to keep them, to return them to Mexico and round them up.
Okay.
We have enough people to do that. That doesn't solve the problem.
No, it doesn't. Well, I want to ask you about something else as we arrive at the last 10 minutes of the program. It seems that the Oklahoma governor, this guy named Kevin Stitt, I never heard his name before, he happens to be a Republican. He's not planning on getting a COVID-19 booster shot, despite the health official. I don't know why he doesn't want to take it. I guess because he's a Republican.
So the other day when Donald Trump was at the rally and said he got his booster with Bill O'Reilly, I believe they were in Tampa or Orlando, I forget which one.
Uh-huh.
He said, I got my booster. And you know what happened? He got booed. He got booed by his own supporters. So this governor probably, I'm not going to get booed. I'm not going to tell you whether I got a booster. And you know who else didn't tell us whether they got a booster? DeSantis.
No.
He refuses to say whether he got a booster also. They don't want to take the chance on being booed by
their constituents
and supporters. Right. Mm. Now, think about that. So they're willing to sacrifice everybody else's health. That's not leadership. It's the opposite of leadership. You're supposed to lead by example. The example they're setting is cowardice.
So have we arrived at a point that was informed by the Trump administration and evidently some of the failings of the present administration, the Biden administration, that has actually created a new divide? Are we going to be divided like this for who knows how many administrations into the future, or is there a pariah somewhere out there that can bring us back to a normalcy?
Yeah, an attack from an alien spaceship would do that. That would do it.
Yeah, that would be it, huh?
Yeah, that'd be it. Other than that, I don't see any other way. The only way we are going to get back together is when you're always going to get 25%, okay, that are unhappy and think the government's cheating and all of that business. The only way we're going to go back to not being at each other's throats is when the full depth of the Trump corruption, both governmentally and financially, in terms of, you know, that Ivanka and Jared increased their net worth by $600 million while they were working in the White House. People need to know that. Because they made deals in China. Remember that meeting when Ivanka was with her father and had a seat at the table, and they got five or six patents while they were in China, while they were working in the White House? Okay. So once the nation realizes that they've been by one of the biggest con artists in history, then we can start getting back together. The other thing I think needs to happen is there has to be a mitigation of the income inequality that we are experiencing in the United States. Not since the Great Depression has there been such income inequality. We have 10% of the people owning 90% of the assets of the nation. Think about that. In the 1940s and 50s, if a worker made $20,000 a year, the CEO, maybe he made 20 times as much, but he didn't make 300 times as much. Now you have CEOs making tens and hundreds of millions of dollars and stock options while the worker is still making 45 or 50 grand. That's got to stop because resentment is going to flow from that income inequality.
But do we hear that from either the Democrats or the Republicans? Because I don't see anyone trying to promote that yet.
Well, you got to look very carefully, don't you? Some people are. I am.
Well, I know you are, of course, and it's very lucid, and it makes all the sense in the world.
Students of history, of economic history, are aware of it.
Well, we've been talking about this now for 30 years, and nothing's been happening.
But you didn't ask me for a solution. You simply asked me how long
are
we going to be divided. The answer is until we solve that problem, there will be division in the nation.
Well, there are solutions to it. It's just that there isn't a will to change the reality. I guess that would have to be inculcated in law somehow. But I don't know if that's going to happen quickly either.
Or in policy. So when you got Mark Zuckerberg worth $1 billion and you got this guy worth $1 billion, everybody's worth $1 billion. That never used to happen. Yeah. I mean, you had one guy maybe, Andrew Carnegie, the richest man in the world.
Right.
But most CEOs were not filthy rich. They were comfortable.
Yeah.
Oh, now you've got everybody's got a plane.
Yeah, well, they're telling us how cheap it is to have a plane now. You know, evidently that's the going thing. My God, did you get yours yet already or not yet?
Yeah, mine's on its way.
Oh, good for you. Well, I feel better because, you know, I wouldn't have wanted you not to have one because I think you need to get around.
So, I need to get around.
That's good. Absolutely. So where do you think the demeanor of the nation is going? Are we just on the verge of becoming aware? And we haven't been. We've been divided politically up to this point. Mm-hmm. And now with the January 6th, insurrection information coming out, that should conceivably change the demeanor of the nation, or will we still be politically divided? And
now,
like you said, maybe it'll only be 25%.
Yeah. Well, you've got, as long as you've got Fox News and OAN and Breitbart and Newsmax, As long as you have these people peddling misinformation, disinformation, and the big lie, as long as you have gullible listeners that are willing to parrot what they hear, as long as you have that, you're always going to have 25% of the people that believe in conspiracies. That's nothing new about that, by the way.
No, absolutely not. So what about the very liberal wing of the Democratic Party? What about the Ocasio-Cortezes of the world and Bernie Sanders and so on and so forth?
Yeah.
Are they also part of the problem of the rhetoric that comes out of their mouths? Or are they too far to the left as opposed to being more centrist? And is America leaning centrist, or are they leaning one way or the other?
America is either slightly to the right of the center or slightly to the left of center, depending upon the economic situation that prevails at the time. Right now, because of income inequality, I believe taking social issues off the table, all right, they shouldn't be on the table, but let's take them off the table as a political issue. I believe the country is left of center at this particular time, because I believe that people that have been given the short end of the stick, or that believe they've been given the short end. I think something needs to be done to bring them back in to the fold so that they believe that the nation and its public officials are doing their business as well as doing
their own business. So do you think that
their own
business? It seems logical that financial capacity of earning a living will embolden probably other people to respect more and more people, more of the population. Is that one of the problems that's been driving the bias and bigotry against people of color or particular religions and so on and so forth? Is that all part of it?
What's driving it, okay, is the perception that white Christians are going to lose power with the changing demographics. They're not willing to do that. And they're not willing to go quietly into the evening because they feel their social status and their political status and the power that they had in the 50s, 60s, 70s is being dissipated by demographic change. Now, that change is going to come whether they like it or not.
Right.
Okay, that change is not going to change. We have a situation in this country where there will be minority-majority status. So if you got a problem with that, maybe you should go live somewhere else. But that's the way it's going to be.
Is this the first time that this sort of transitional perspective is coming to America? It never happened before, did it?
Yes, it did. Right after the Civil War.
I don't know what happened then. You know that. You know, as a foreigner, you know, I just don't always have that perspective. That's why I ask all these questions, because astounded.
After the Civil War, when supposedly blacks were free and had their chains undone, in the South, there was no acceptance that blacks had equal power. And laws were passed, whether they were voting laws, poll taxes, or other kinds of laws to discriminate against blacks, even though they were free. And so because what was going on in the South was these white Southerners believed that the Confederacy was a cause that was honorable rather than being traitorous, which they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to preserve that. They wanted to preserve their social status and their political power. And so they started passing laws, much as today you've got how many states that are proposing voting restrictions that adversely affect minority voters? That's what you have. So it's a similar situation, except the difference is now you've got demographic change, which you did not have after the Civil War.
So this is because the population is changing, right? More than political dogma.
It's not political at all.
It's all population.
That's correct. The color of the population is becoming less white and more light brown.
Darker.
Yeah, darker. But then look at it this way. Jesus was dark. So people
so
shouldn't,
I
so
hear.
These evangelicals should not, yeah, so these evangelicals really shouldn't have a problem with it, but they do. Because they're really not Christians. They're, what they are is white supremacists that who are masquerading as Christians and using that as a shield to keep them in power, both politically and socially. But are they doing?
Well, Jesus was
doing
a Semite, so he wasn't white. He wasn't white like the English.
No, he wasn't white. Like, he wasn't white like the Greeks. He was dark.
Yeah, he was
I don't know
dark.
What shade of dark. I don't know what shade of dark.
I have no idea either.
He was more sober than he was Ashkenazi. He certainly wasn't an Ashkenazi.
Well, that's very true. Oh, gosh.
Right?
Well, listen, as always, a brilliant dissertation by you, and thank you for teaching me. I appreciate it. Have a wonderful year.
My pleasure.
Good health. And
okay.
Thank you for your time.
I appreciate
always.
You.
Be well.
My
best
my pleasure.
Family. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. Well, there we have it. None other than Michael Edelman, political analyst and pundit. I love the way he balances the two. But you know when he's talking about punditry and when you know he's talking about analysis. Very, very clear. No equivocation. So you can't go away befuddled by anything that he says or does. Very interesting. Well, let's go and cover some other things. Oh, just so you know, we were expecting to speak this particular week. It's every other week. Now, we expected to speak to none other than Ron Matten. He's a politician. He ran for political office here in the city of Yonkers, but he has other responsibilities today. He won't be able to attend. You know, I didn't want to make a big issue out of it. Just that he advised me yesterday that he won't be able to attend, so I felt bad about it because it's always just terrific to talk to him because we get a different perspective from him, and he's not like cookie-cutter thinker, which is great. And so I just like, you know, to get a jolt of some reality from his perspective. And always good to hear. Okay, so let's look at some other things that you may find pertinent today. Bear with me a moment. And okay, so we got here. We're okay here. And let me go see if I can go back to the studio screen in a moment. Okay, as you may have heard if you were reading our website here at the Yonkers Tribune, there have the schools that were expected to open in the city of Yonkers will not. And I ended up writing what is affectionately known by my readers who demanded that I change the name, to change the word a hesitorial because I write the editorials. So they are now known simply as the hesitorial, and that's what we've been doing for all this time. So bear with me a moment as I try to reach out to that, and then I'll be able to read this to you. This is, bear with me a moment. Yeah, this is the editorial. Let me just think. Yeah, this is the editorial that I published on the 1st, but it is no longer a subscriber-only accessible article. We usually leave that for our subscribers, and they get first dibs on the information, but I think you'll find this really quite interesting. So the title of this editorial is Yonkers Public School. Yonkers Public School District resuscitates failed remote learning experience for students and teaching staff alike. And this is called the I Accuse, quote-unquote, hesitorial, revealing the misconduct of the Yonkers Board of Education Board of Trustees and Yonkers Public Schools District Superintendent Dr. Edwin Quezada. So this is the editorial. The chill of winter blows through the corridors of the disparate Yonkers Public School District due to a lack of planning that is evidently commensurate with and attributable to the deficient leadership and failed planning by none other than Yonkers Public School District Superintendent Dr. Edwin Quezada, whose lofty title is tarnished by his evident incompetence. The schools were not disinfected as they had to have been, and not all students were able to afford a new laptop, and some students did get one at no cost to them, but turned the ones they were given at no cost to them and could not validate that the equipment they at one time had was stolen or broken, as police reports are non-existent. The schools were not disinfected as they had to have been. Not all students were able to afford a laptop, whether a Chromebook or a laptop. Teaching staff and students, whether vaccinated or not, have fallen ill to COVID-19, the Delta variant or the more infectious Omicron variant. The Yonkers Public School District announced its calamitous predicament without explaining or much less owning up to its failed efforts to proficiently plan for students and teaching staff returning to their respective classrooms after the winter recess. The lack of preparedness was not divulged to the third largest city in New York State. Instead, some media outlets beyond the boundary lines of the city of Yonkers were informed that the Yonkers Public School District would not open for the week beginning January 3rd. Their lack of planning is such that they would not advise anyone when and or if they intended to be prepared to accept teaching staff and ancillary workers, as well as the student population at their respective schools. As is unfortunately too often the case, Yonkers' lack of planning and lack of foresight will not earn the deserved wrath of grandparents, parents, their children, teachers, and the Yonkers Board of Education, Board of Trustees, who are demanded to oversee the conduct of everyone, including Yonkers Public School District Superintendent Dr. Edwin Quezada. Now, the city of Yonkers has been lulled into complacency by the monotonously redundant failing of the Yonkers Public School District to its shame and to its disinterest and deficient capacity in meeting the challenges met with alacrity by other districts to the residents of the city of Yonkers' utter silent disgust, fearing retribution should they give expression to the reality they and their children and the teaching and ancillary staff suffer. Which begs the question as to why the Yonkers Board of Education's collective incompetence is met with higher salaries. Laudatory praise of their incompetence, while the student body is coerced into a wanting environment to which their individual and collective capacity to excel in academia is undermined by the Yonkers Public School District and the Yonkers Board of Education Board of Trustees' disinterest. According to the district, a, quote, significant increase in positive COVID-19 cases, end quote, prompted the decision to revert back to remote learning from Monday, January 3rd to Friday, January 7th of 2022. There are many reading this editorial who may not be aware that many students have not learned how to use whatever computer, laptop, Chromebook they possess. Some parents/guardians know they too are not fully versed in how to use the technology. Even teaching staff has not learned best practice modalities to best connect with students when engaging remote learning. Well, the Yonkers Public School District informed that free rapid tests will be available to staff and students on Sunday, January 2nd between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. at select schools. Yet, as is typical of the messaging, it is lazy because it does not specify what schools will have the rapid test and those that will not. And since the student population is said to be about 23,000, presently diminished by 3,000 to 4,000 students in the last 2 years who have entered private, religious, or even special schools, the school district does still not have a sufficient number of test kits available to test the entire student body. The teaching staff, nurses, custodians, principal, kitchen help, etc. And for inquiring minds, even though this editor is unaware of how many are teaching and ancillary staff, there are insufficient rapid tests available for testing of all who need to be tested in order to reopen the school district. And for those who could not get tested due to a lack of available tests, when will they be able to return to their respective classroom or classrooms? When will the test kits become available? Will students, teachers, and ancillary staff return by the end of January, perhaps February, or will it be March 2022? When, Dr. Quezada? Upon reflection, this is a pointless question because Dr. Quezada has no answer, and he has also not sought one. Had he done so, the press notices he sent to communities situated beyond Yonkers border would have an answer, but they do not. While the Yonkers Public School District announced its calamitous predicament without explaining or much less owning up to its failed efforts to proficiently plan for students and teaching staff returning to their respective classrooms after the winter recess. The lack of preparedness was not divulged to the third largest city in New York State. Instead, some media outlets beyond the boundary lines of the city of Yonkers were informed that the Yonkers Public School District would not open for a week beginning January 3rd. Their lack of planning is such that they would not advise anyone when and or if they intended to be prepared to accept teaching staff and the student population at their respective schools. According to the district, a, quote, significant increase in positive COVID-19 cases, end quote, prompted the decision to revert back to remote learning from Monday, January 3rd to Friday, January 7th of 2022. BS is my word. They never planned. That's why it matters if the COVID-19 cases had increased positively. Well, lest it escape some reader's sensibilities, Yonkers Public School District was fully aware that the schools were not disinfected. They were also aware of how many teaching staff and ancillary staff were infected and or recuperating from COVID-19, no matter the variant. The takeaway with respect to the Yonkers Public School continues to be equivocation, lacking lucidity because the messaging is intended to be obtuse, ambiguous, meant only to mislead formed. Some people that free rapid tests would be available to staff and students on Sunday, January 2nd between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. at select schools, yet as is typical of the messaging, it expressed lazily because it did not specify what schools would have the rapid tests and those that would not, the ultimate crapshoot, quote unquote. Well, since the student population is said to be about 23,000, does the school district have that many test kits available? And for inquiring minds, even though this editor is unaware of how many are teaching and ancillary staff, are there proficient rapid tests for all? And for those who could not get tested due to a lack of available tests, when will they be able to return to their respective classroom or classrooms? Well, Yonkers Superintendent Dr. Edwin Quezada, messaging is redundantly obtuse and noncommittal. In a pre-Christmas message, he warns that remote learning would be a possibility if conditions worsened, but he did not plan for worsening conditions that were known to evolve on a deleterious course, the Omicron COVID-19 variant disinfection. A disinfectiousness doubled the number of patients who succumbed to its ability to cause infection in greater numbers than the Delta variant had. The takeaway is simple, glaring, and unacceptable. Dr. Quezada is drowning in his own incompetence and disinterest, as is the overseeing body known as the Yonkers Board of Education Board of Trustees, who are nothing more than pandering sycophants who garner plaudits ill-earned by their lack of leadership as they meander along unperturbed by their collective ignorance. The only issue now is when will Yonkers, I'd say, enough? When will Yonkers City Hall at the end of this failed saga that undermined Yonkers' prospects, when will City Hall bring to an end to this failed saga that undermines Yonkers' prospects, its residents, and its children? Very, very interesting, because I don't know if we'll ever get the answer to that. Unfortunately, I saw some spelling errors. I'll have to review this later on. Don't have the capacity to do that at the moment. Bear with me a moment, and bear with me a second here. Okay. All right. Bear with me a second here as we move on to some other issues and concerns. I'm going to look at some other things here. Bear with me. Okay. All right, let's just see what's happening here. All right. Well, this is very interesting. We hear this from Brazil. It seems that the Brazilian president, Jair Bolsonaro, was taken to a Sao Paulo hospital for tests early on Monday after experiencing abdominal discomfort. The government said Bolsonaro is doing well, quote unquote, and further information will be provided later in a medical bulletin, a government statement published by the global media outlet had said. Bolsonaro returned to the financial capital during the night from a New Year break on the coast and was immediately taken to a hospital by the name of Vila Nova Star, according to Global, the media outlet. Global quoted Bolsonaro's doctor, Antonio Luis Macedo, as Bolsonaro had stomach pains. Macedo operated on Bolsonaro after he was stabbed at a political rally in 2018. Global, the news publication, said that Macedo was on holiday in the Bahamas and was waiting for a flight back to Brazil to see Bolsonaro, who reportedly had no public appearances scheduled for today. Since his stabbing during the 2018 presidential election, Bolsonaro has undergone stomach surgery several times. Last July, he was hospitalized due to a severe case of hiccups. So we'll have to see where all that goes. I don't think he's inoculated against the COVID virus, but whatever. Now, one second. One second here. All right, where is this? Oh, yeah. Schumer says that the Senate's going to vote on a filibuster change on the voting bill. So days before the anniversary of the January 6th attack on the Capitol, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced the Senate will vote on filibuster rule changes in advance stalled voting legislation, which Democrats say is needed to protect your democracy. So in a letter to colleagues, Schumer, who represents New York, said that the Senate must evolve, quote unquote, and will, quote, debate and consider, end quote, the rule changes by January 17th on or before Martin Luther King Jr. Day, as the Democrats seek to overcome Republican opposition to their election law package. So he says, let me be clear, January 6th, was a symptom of a broader illness, an effort to delegitimize our election process, Schumer wrote, and the Senate must advance systemic democracy reforms to repair our republic, or else the event of that day will not be an aberration. They will be the new norm. So this is what we already spoke about, of course, with respect to Michael Edelman, Esquire, our political analyst, and who is with us every Monday morning at 10:30. Now, one second. Now, this is very interesting. President Biden is going to meet virtually with independent farmers and ranchers to discuss initiatives to reduce food prices by increasing competition within the meat industry, part of a broader effort to show the administration is trying to combat inflation. Well, the White House event occurs Monday afternoon as higher than expected inflation has thwarted consumer prices in November, rose 6.8% over the prior 12 months, a 39-year high. Inflation has hurt Biden's public approval, become fodder for Republican attacks, and prompted Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, to cite higher prices as a reason to sideline the Democratic president's tax, social, and economic programs. And Biden is building off a July executive order that directed the Agriculture Department to more aggressively look at possible violations of the 1921 Packers and Stockyards Act, which was designed to ensure fair competition and protect consumers. Well, meat prices have climbed 16% from a year ago, with beef prices up 20.9%. Well, the administration is targeting meat processing plants, which can shape the prices paid to farmers and charged to consumers. The White House issued a fact sheet saying that the top four companies control 85% of the meat market, of the beef market. In poultry, the biggest four processing firms control 54% of the market, and for pork, the figure is 70% for the four biggest firms. Biden plans to stress the plans to distribute $1 billion from the coronavirus relief package to help independent meat processors expand. He also plans to highlight funding to train workers in the industry and improve conditions, as well as issue new rules for meat packers and labeling requirements for being designated a, quote, product of USA. The Justice Department and the Agriculture Department will launch a joint effort to make it easier to report anti-competitive actions to the government. The administration will also seek to improve the transparency of the cattle market, and the effort is part of a broader attempt to regain control of America's economic narrative. And besides inflation, the repeated waves of coronavirus outbreak have dampened people's opinion about the economy despite strong growth over the past year. Now, Biden will have an opportunity to highlight the economy's strengths with the December jobs report being released on Friday. Economists surveyed by FactSet expect 362,000 votes last month when the unemployment rate ticked down to 4.1%. Gains of that magnitude would indicate that the United States added roughly 6.5 million jobs last year, more than in any other previous year, in a reflection of population growth and government spending. So we'll have to see where all that goes. So bear with me a moment. Let me move on to the next page as we move on. Now, let's look at the pandemic. Evidently, the pandemics do eventually end, even if Omicron is complicating the question of when this one will. But it won't be like flipping a light switch and the world will have to learn to coexist with a virus that's not going away. The ultra-contagious Omicron mutant is pushing cases to all-time highs and causing chaos as an exhausted world struggles again to stem the spread, but this time we're not starting from scratch. Vaccines offer strong protection from serious illness, even if they don't always prevent a mild infection. Omicron doesn't appear to be as deadly as some earlier variants, and those who survive it will have some refreshed protection against other forms of the virus that still are circulating, and maybe the next mutant to emerge as well. Well, the newest variant is a warning about what will continue to happen unless we really get serious about the end game, said Dr. Albert Koh, K-O, an infectious disease specialist at the Yale School of Public Health. Certainly COVID will be with us forever, Koh had added. We're never going to be able to eradicate or eliminate COVID, so we have to identify our goals. At some point, the World Health Organization will determine when enough countries have tamped down their COVID-19 cases sufficiently, or at least hospitalization and deaths, to declare the pandemic officially over. Exactly what that threshold will be is unclear, and that's what's really important. And even when that happens, some parts of the world will still struggle, especially low-income countries that lack enough vaccines or treatments, while others more easily transition to what scientists call an endemic state. their fuzzy distinctions, said infectious disease expert Stephen Kissler of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. He defines the endemic period as reaching, quote, some sort of acceptable steady state, end quote, to deal with COVID-19. The Omicron crisis shows we're not there yet. I do not think we will reach a point where SARS-CoV-2 is endemic, much like flu is endemic, he said. For comparison, COVID-19 has killed more than 800,000 Americans in 2 years, while flu typically kills between 12 and 52,000 a year. Exactly how much continuing COVID-19 illness and deaths the world will put up with is largely a social question, not a scientific one. We're not going to get to a point where it's 2019 again, said Dr. Amish Adalja, a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. We've got to get people to think about risk tolerance. Now, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top U.S. infectious disease expert, is looking ahead to controlling the virus in a way, quote, that does not disrupt society, that does not disrupt the economy. Already, the United States is sending signals that it's on the road to whatever will become the new normal. The Biden administration says there are enough tools, vaccine boosters, new treatments, and masking to handle even the Omicron threat without the shutdown of the pandemic's earlier days. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention just reduced to 5 days the time that people with COVID-19 must stay in isolation so they don't sicken others, saying it's become clear they're most contagious only early on, which I think that's a little bit too soon, but whatever. You know, I'm certainly don't have the information that Dr. Fauci has, so it's going to be very interesting. so anyway, so that's the story there. Bear with me a moment as we look on to some other issues. 1 second here. 1 minute here. This is a little bit frightening, unfortunately. A Hong Kong news site is going to shut down. Pro-Beijing lawmakers are sworn in. A group of lawmakers loyal to China's Communist Party were sworn in to Hong Kong's legislature today following an election without opposition candidates, as yet another pro-democracy news outlet announced it could no longer operate amid a growing crackdown on freedoms in the territory. Well, the former British colony that was returned to China in 1997 was once known as a haven for dissent and freedoms of the press and expression, not seen on the mainland. But the central government in Beijing has clamped down in the last year, leading to the closure of independent news outlets, the removal of monuments to dissent, and a poorly attended election swept by pro-Beijing politicians. The founders of news outlet Citizen News, said the news site will stop publishing on Tuesday. While they have received no order to close, they said Monday that deteriorating media freedoms in the financial hub put them in an impossible position. We all love this place deeply. Regrettably, what was ahead of us is not just pouring rain or blowing winds, but hurricanes and tsunamis, Citizen News said in a statement on Sunday when it announced the closure. The outlet is the third to close in recent months, following the shuttering of the territory's last pro-democracy print newspaper called Apple Daily and the online site Stand News. Citizen News was founded in 2017 by a group of veteran journalists. The small site focused on political news and analysis pieces, as well as investigations, became a refuge for many journalists who had lost their jobs when other outlets closed or faced other pressures. With Apple Daily's sudden closure in the past summer, the journalism majors who were originally supposed to intern with them, Citizen News made arrangements to take them in so that students wouldn't lose this internship opportunity, said Vivian W.W. Tom, T-A-M, a senior lecturer at the Chinese University of Hong Kong's Journalism School. In a public Facebook post, Tom declined to be interviewed. But a new sweeping national security law imposed on Hong Kong by China's central legislature has made independent reporting increasingly dangerous. Journalists and political activists have been arrested under the law, and it has forced civil rights groups and unions to disband. Many more activists have fled. Meanwhile, new laws have changed how Hong Kongers vote for their representatives, including a requirement that any who seek office must be patriots, quote-unquote, effectively bringing the body under Beijing's control. What we understood about press freedom has changed a lot, said Chris Young, founder and chief writer at Citizen News. Young said at a news conference on Monday that the trigger for their decision to shut down was what happened to Stand News. Last week, authorities raided Stand News and arrested 7 people, including editors and former board members, for allegedly conspiring to publish seditious material. Stand News announced on the same day that it would cease to operate. 2 of Stand News' former editors who were arrested were later formally charged with sedition. In the summer, authorities forced the closure of Apple Daily, the newspaper owned by media tycoon and democracy activist Jimmy Lai. Lai is currently in jail and was newly charged with sedition last week. Quote, I fear that this will turn Hong Kong into a black box, that no one will be informed, end quote, said Chung Ching Kwong, the project manager at the Committee for Freedom in Hong Kong. She said that although Citizen News had not been contacted by authorities, she views the closures. I think in general the closures are basically involuntarily because that's this fear. There's this fear that they cannot do real and genuine journalism in the current political environment in Hong Kong, said Kwong, an activist from Hong Kong who now lives in Germany. The Society of Publishers in Asia, a group based in Hong Kong that hosts an annual journalism award, also said on Monday it is concerned about pressure against independent media in the city. The United States and other Western governments have condemned the limits on media and civil freedoms that Beijing promised to uphold for 50 years following Hong Kong's 1997 handover. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam last week defended the raid on Stand News, telling reporters that inciting other people could not be condoned under the guise of news reporting, end quote. The only remaining independent news media with reach in the city are Hong Kong Free Press, an English-language news outlet, and Initium, a Chinese-language news outlet, which moved its headquarters to Singapore in August, but still has staff in the city. Citizen News likens itself to a small dinghy in rough waters. At the center of a brewing storm, we found ourselves in a critical situation. In the face of a crisis, we must ensure the safety and well-being of everyone who are on board, it said. And this story has been updated after the national security law was passed in 2020, not 2019 as initially reported, and Wu reported from Taipei in Taiwan. Very, very frightening what's going on, and who knows how long it'll take before the Chinese mainland invade Taiwan. I don't think it'll take too long. It'll probably happen this year. Unbelievable. Just literally unbelievable. We are living in tumultuous times. It's very frightening, to say the least. Bear with me a moment. I want to look to see what else is happening on the world stage here. 1 second. To this, evidently, wintry weather combined with the pandemic is going to frustrate air travelers whose return flights home from the holidays were canceled or delayed in the first days of the new year. More than 2,600 U.S. flights and more than 4,400 worldwide were grounded on Sunday, according to tracking service Flight Aware. And that follows Saturday's mass cancellation of more than 2,700 U.S. flights and more than 4,700 worldwide. It was absolute mayhem, said Natasha Enos, who spent a sleepless Saturday night and Sunday morning at Denver International Airport during what was supposed to be a short layover on a cross-country trip from Washington to San Francisco. Saturday's single-day U.S. toll of grounded flights was the highest since just before Christmas, when airlines began blaming staffing shortages on increasing COVID-19 infections among crew. A winter storm that hit the Midwest on Saturday morning made Chicago the worst place in the country for travelers throughout the weekend. About a quarter of all flights at O'Hare Airport were canceled on Sunday. Denver's airport also faced significant disruptions. Enos, who was flying on Frontier Airlines, didn't learn that her connecting flight home to California was canceled until she had already landed in Denver. Then it was a rush to find alternative flights and navigate through baggage claims packed with stranded and confused travelers amid concerns about the spread of the highly transmissible Omicron variant of COVID-19. It was a lot of people in a very small space and not everyone was masking, said the 28-year-old financial analyst. There were a lot of exhausted kids and some families were so stressed out. In Michigan, the authority that runs Detroit's international airport said crews were working around the clock to remove snow and maintain the airfield. Atlanta's airport authority advised travelers to arrive earlier than usual because of high passenger volume, potential weather issues, and pandemic-fueled staffing shortages that could lengthen the time it takes to get through security gates. And thousands of miles from the closest snowstorms, Hawaiian Airlines said it had to cancel several flights between islands and across due to staffing shortages. Southwest Airlines said it was working to help customers affected by about 400 flights canceled around the country on Sunday, about 11% of its schedule. The Dallas-based airline anticipates even more operational challenges to come as the storm system pushes into the eastern seaboard. Delta Airlines said on Sunday it was issuing a travel waiver for planned flights this week out of mid-Atlantic airports in Baltimore and Washington in preparation for forecasted winter weather. American Airlines said most of its Sunday's canceled flights had been canceled ahead of time to avoid last-minute disruptions at the airport. SkyWest, a regional carrier that operates flights under the names of American Eagle, Delta Connection, and United Express, grounded more than 500 flights on Sunday, about 20% of its schedule, according to FlightAware. Airlines have said they are taking steps to reduce cancellation caused by workers affected by the pandemic, and United is offering to pay pilots triple or more of their usual wages for picking up open flights through most of January. Spirit Airlines reached a deal with the Association of Flight Attendants for double pay for cabin crews through Tuesday, a union spokesperson had said, and airlines hope that extra pay and reduced schedules get them through the holiday crush and into the heart of January, when travel demand usually drops off. The seasonal decline could be sharper than normal this year because most business travelers are still grounded. So, unbelievable what's going on. Really unbelievable. So, worst time in the world to go through some sort of whatever. God. 1 second. Let's just look at some other things. Bear with me a moment. One second. Okay, I see it's about 20 minutes to 12. And let me just look to see if there's anything else that we really should share with you before we close the day. Bear with me a moment. Where are we? I think that's really it. One second. Oh, yeah, this was very interesting, and I didn't really quite understand all of this. Verizon and AT&T have rejected a request by the United States government to delay the rollout of next-generation wireless technology. It seems that a joint letter on Sunday from the telecommunication giants to the United States Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg and Steve Dickinson, the head of the Federal Aviation Administration, sought to dismiss concerns brought by U.S. airlines that a new 5G wireless service could harm aviation. But Hans Vestberg, the CEO of Verizon Communication, and John Stanley, the CEO of AT&T, also wrote that they were willing to accept some temporary measures over the next 6 months to limit the service around certain airport runways. Airlines had asked the Federal Communication Commission to delay this week's scheduled 5G rollout, saying the service, set to launch on Wednesday, could interfere with electronics that pilots rely on. Well, Airlines for America, a trade group for large U.S. passenger and cargo carriers, said in an emergency filing that the Federal Communication Commission has failed to adequately consider the harm that 5G service could do to the industry. And the industry wants, the group wants, more time for the Federal Communication Commission and the Federal Aviation Authority, which regulates airlines, to resolve issues around aviation safety. And those are related to a type of 5G service that relies on chunks of radio spectrum called C-band, which wireless carriers spent billions of dollars to buy up last year. Siding in part with airlines, Buttigieg and Dickinson wrote late Friday to the CEOs of AT&T and Verizon to propose a delay in activating 5G C-band service near an undetermined number of priority airports while the FAA studies the potential for interference with aircraft operations. Well, AT&T and Verizon previously agreed to a one-month delay in 5G, which provides faster speeds when mobile devices connect to their networks and allows users to connect many devices to the Internet without slowing it down. But the telecommunications executive said on Sunday that further delays requested by the government would harm their customers. Quote, agreeing to your proposal would not only be an unprecedented and unwarranted circumstance of the due process and checks and balances carefully crafted in the structure of our democracy, but an irresponsible abdication of the operating control required to deploy world-class and globally competitive communication networks that are every bit as essential to our country's economic vitality, public safety, and national interest to the airlines industry, the executives wrote. Well, so evidently the scheduled service would start on Wednesday, not on Tuesday, as I think we initially said. Okay, so that seems to be our story today. It's about 11:45. Let me just check and see who we have scheduled for you tomorrow. Tomorrow's Tuesday. Bear with me a moment. On Tuesdays, we've always got a beautiful lineup. We're going to speak to CMU, Cooley College, law school professors Jeff Swartz and Brendan Beery from 10 to 11 tomorrow, Tuesday, January 4th. Michael Letts from the Invest USA, INVEST USA, 501c3 operation that buys vests for police officers across the country. And a vest nowadays runs about $750 that could stop the bullets that are used today to kill people, including police officers who don't have vests. And then from 11:30 to 12, we're going to speak to Bob Marone, the news anchor of Westchester Radio. So we'll talk to him. So fascinating day, to say the least. All right, so there we have it, folks. Thank you for being with us today. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for listening. All the best. Be well. Goodbye. So that's the end of our time here. Let's close the our time. And let me go back to our studio screen. We need to close the studio screen first. And there we are. Goodbye.